as soon as he starts becoming a number, 12124, I could not get my brain away from Les Miserables, of all places.
Because 24601.
Yes,
I was about to say the exact same thing.
So now as I'm reading this in my head, I'm going 12124 every single time that he's, you know, addressing him by name, because I'm thinking of Javert, the Inspector Javert, you know, condescending, 24601, do this thing. And it's like, okay, is this a prisoner inmate, or is this a person?
Welcome back to Following Know It On, a Stormlight podcast. This week is episode 257, and we are in chapters 86, 87, and interludes 13 and 14, the end of day 7 of When in Truth. Elliot, how are you?
I am doing quite well. We're getting far along-ish in this book. Several hundred pages left to go. Yeah, don't let me scare you too much. Left to go, but this is, I think we said this last week, the big stuff, and it continues on in these chapters. Epigraphs get pretty wild again, as they have been. So here we go. When in Truth, getting real.
Speaking of several hundred chapters left in the book, that like funny little mishap Elliot said, I have something crazy that I don't know if y'all know about. Did y'all know? So I've always listened to the books on Audible, and I think most audiobook listeners probably use Audible, but there's all sorts of platforms. I have a friend who started reading Stormlight, very excited, and uses, I don't remember the platform exactly. I want to say it's some kind of Apple or Google like podcast, or sorry, like audiobook thing. And it does not divide this book up by chapters, but by tracks. And my understanding is, it's not like, okay, chapter 87 and then interlude 13. It's just track, like interludes are also just tracks. Illustration things are also just tracks. And my understanding is it also changes every time it switches between Michael Kramer and Kate Redding. So he's like halfway through Words of Radiance and he's on track like 117 or something. And like that's just messing with my brain a lot. And so if we were listening with that, I don't know if that works or what's going on there. But if we were, then I'd bet we were several hundred. If it's changing every like perspective or something like that, I bet we would be several hundred tracks away. I don't know if anyone listening to our podcast uses that platform. If so, let me know, because that's kind of funny. But anyways, something bizarre I saw recently. So there you go.
How are you?
I'm good. Yeah, I'm doing great. We're wrapping up day seven. About to start day 8, meaning there's 3 days left, which is scary.
Some good math there, Paul. Good job.
Very scary. Thank you very much. Very scary to be getting this close. I both feel like we are in Sander Lynch territory and not quite. We're on that lead up to the climax that is ever so antagonizing to be a member of this podcast and to not just read through the end of the book.
I disagree. I think there's going to be a false summit. If anyone's ever climbed to a mountain above Timberline, you'll understand what I'm talking about. There's going to be a false summit of Sander Lynch in this book. We're going to approach day 10 and we're going to be like, oh, that was the big like announcement, Sander Lynch. And then we're going to get to day 10 and something is going to completely flip and everything we know is going to change. And that will be our Sander Lynch.
We're going to round the corner and see the other peak. It's far in the distance or something.
Yes.
Is that your analogy?
I love so much how many times the Coloradans on this podcast have brought up that metaphor, because it's probably at least like 7 now at this point. It is, true. Fantastic metaphor. I would have disagreed with you. I thought we were headed for a pretty straightforward 10 days until I read the half a page long interlude 14. And I've completely changed my mind now. And I'll tell you why when we get to that discussion here in a little bit.
Paul, do we have a patron?
Oh, look at you, Trevor. You remembered. Yes, we do.
I'm so good at this.
Very excited. You know, it's just one name this week, but a very important name. And so I'm very, very excited to shout out on my mug, question mark. I have more of a like a tray thing here. It's actually a Pyrex like food storage container that's like glass. This is actually not mine. My shout out to my brother-in-law and sister-in-law. They left it at our house, and so I'm using it for washed it, and I'm using it because I'm running out of options. So
you're gonna wash it again? Shout out,
yes, I will. I will wash it before giving it back to them. I promise. Shout out to Faina. I believe I'm saying that right, but Faina is an ardent. We haven't had an ardent in a minute, I think. If we have, I'm very sorry, but it's been a minute since we've had an ardent, and very excited. So thank you so much, Faina, for all your help, and we're very much excited to have you along. So here's a nice Pyrex storage container. You're welcome.
Thank you, Faina.
Thank you, Faina.
All right, Elliot, the end of day 7, what happens?
Oh, yeah, I guess I got to summarize these. Huh, okay. Now, chapter 86 and 87 wraps up day 7. So 86, Kaladin is cooking stew and playing his flute. Nail's kind of grumpy about it. Zeth keeps asking more questions, and they're therapizing for a little bit. And then Zeth's Heisbren pops out of nowhere and goes, ooh, therapy, can I get some of that too? And Kaladin has a comical almost discussion with him about some of those things. And then Kaladin talks a little bit with the wind about Nail. And that wraps up the Kaladin section there. We then jump over to Shallan very briefly. I didn't really take much notes on. I think she's just kind of musing on what they need to do with Mishram and what's the plan. Do we find the prison? Do we let her out? Do we hide the prison? Like, what do we do? Chapter 87 goes back to Dalinar. Dalinar and Navani are in this secret meeting between Gareth the Windrunner and some of his Windrunner buddies and the singers. And the big surprise that we get is that Gareth is in a secret relationship with the leader person of the singers. I think her name was like Shimon. I think that's like dropped one time in the chapter there.
I remember specifically that Dalinar still didn't know her name halfway through the vision, but then eventually they drop her name. I don't remember what it is though.
Yeah. I think Gareth like says it once towards the end. I think it's Shimon or something. It's spelled a little funky. I probably should have made Paul like spell that, but the rest of that, let's see. Lots going on in this scene. So big surprise. They're in a relationship. Mishram is there. So the singers have brought Mishram to supposedly like parley for peace to talk about how we do this. Mishram is still like kind of cranky back in these times, but not super cranky like the modern day, I guess. And then the big surprise, the big twist, Malishi the bondsmith at the direction of Honor captures Mishram into the gemstone and then tosses her off into the spiritual realm. That's the big twist.
Mm-hmm.
Then, yeah, that's kind of where it ends. Honor talks about some really interesting things there. Here's a big one, I guess. Honor gives a vision to all the radiance everywhere. And Dalinar's like, oh, okay, so that's led to the recreants. Everybody sees what destructive potential they have. Everyone turns in their shard blade kind of thing. Kind of leaves us a little bit hanging there, actually, at the end of 87. Very curious to see where that plot line is going to pick up and go. The second half of 87, though, jumps back to Relaine, Renarin, Shallan as they're kind of talking through a few things. Renarin and Relaine have witnessed, you know, everything that just happened there with Mishram. They're talking about, you know, whoa, what are the impacts of that? Relaine actually has a really good little speech, I think, about like choosing to see the good in people and not the bad, which I thought was pretty cool. And then there's a little bit of information drop about, oh, and by the way, all the Unmade were here and watching all this happen. Oh, and then Formless appears and is just walking out of, you know, nowhere up to the gang. And they're like, what the heck is going on here? And then Odium arrives.
Odium arrives. specifically because the Stormfather isn't shielding them anymore. The Stormfather is like, that? Yeah, the Stormfather to Dalinar is like, hey, this is Odium's domain. I'm not going to help you anymore. I'm out. And then Odium shows up.
Not surprised. That guy's kind of shifty. The Stormfather.
And our interludes?
Peaky time.
Oh, yeah, that's only half.
Peaky time.
Okay. Interludes, yes. So interlude 13, 14, well, 14 is literally half a page in the book. It's 100 words, maybe a little more. 13, though, interlude 13 is Lyft. So Lyft is standing in for Navani, pretending to be her, not really enjoying it very much. She hears the tower. The tower's like, hey, I just heard this weird thing. And Lyft goes, oh, that's my parrot, bird, chicken thing. We got to go save that. Long story short, and the chapter actually does drag on a little bit. Lyft goes and saves Xyle, fights off the bad guys that are holding him captive. And then Xyle's like, oh, someone should train you. And Lyft says, oh, okay, you should do that. All right, let's go. And then interlude 14, half a page, Odium is looking at Dalinar going, what the heck do I do with you? Oh, I know what I need to do. I need to break you. The end.
That is literally the end. I have no other comments on that chapter. You said everything. It was that short.
Paul, do you have two words? Even shorter than epigraph or than interlude 14.
Yeah. I do have two words. My two words for this episode are, this is why you write down your two words, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, no. Piggy time.
I'll let Elliot go first, and I'll remember my words. One second.
How about I buy you some time here by sharing my two words?
Thank you.
For these chapters. My two words... It's not very long, so you've only got a few seconds here. My words are therapy session, for all the obvious reasons. Chapter 86 gets into some serious Kaladin in the chair and the patient stretched out on the couch processing their thoughts. Although, I use therapy session almost tongue-in-cheek like it's cheesy. I think Kaladin has gotten a lot better at this than when he first started. I actually noticed that this scene actually flowed quite well, in the sense of, I think Kaladin is actually doing a pretty good job. Whereas his first attempts at therapizing Zeth were super cheesy and not very good at all, but he's improving. He's doing better. Oh, and to tie it into the other chapters, I think Dalinar, Navani, and Renarin, and Relaine, and all them, they're going to need some therapy sessions after everything they're seeing in the spiritual realm. So, there you go. Therapy session.
Kaladin's going to have lots of customers. Lots of clients.
Oh, yeah. Customers. Oh, yeah.
Thank you for buying the time. My two words for this chapter, sorry, for this episode, are reconciliation and freedom. Reconciliation is what I've keyed into the most in this, like, one of the things in this episode. I keep trying to say chapter. In this episode, is Zeth's spren. I was not expecting this. This felt out of left field for me. But him trying to, the spren trying to figure things out, coming for therapy. It's not what I expected. And the spren straight up admits, I don't think I've been doing a very good job. And I could not agree more. So seeking reconciliation, perhaps, with Zeth, which is a huge win in my book. And the other being freedom, that is for the Lyft interlude. For both Lyft and Xyle, a little freedom for Lyft, who's felt trapped, and for Xyle, who has been very trapped as well. So there you have it.
All right.
Freedom. I guess you could also tie that into Mishram losing her freedom and maybe getting it back at some point. So there you go.
Okay. We're going to pause on all that and talk about something way more important than Ba'at Mishram and Odium and the end of the world. We're going to talk about epigraphs. I'm very excited about these epigraphs. Here we go for day 7. I'm sorry. You are right. And your letter to me was characteristically full of wisdom and excellent deductions. I accept that we cannot continue as we have. Somehow, I've never been good at this. 10,000 years, and some things I just cannot learn. In the past, I've held on too tightly. I've worked on that. but find that sometimes my grip is too loose. With you, it was both, wasn't it? Suffocating at times, yet not involved enough at others. In the end, it is my lies that do me in. Another lesson I fail to learn time and time again. I recognize this flaw. I hope it does not someday destroy me. I offer my most sincere apology for everything wrong I've done. I am glad we tried. I am sorry that I continue to be someone with whom a relationship is nearly impossible. Goodbye. It might be a great long time before we see one another again. If ever. All right, who is it?
Maybe an unnamed shard we haven't seen yet?
I mean, surely it's a shard. Whether it's been named or unnamed is the question.
Surely it's a shard. Are you basing that on the time scale reference?
Yes, time scale, and these letters that Hoyd sent out have been to shards in the past.
Yeah. Yes, that I agree. I was trying to think if there's any other characters or races of beings that we could maybe guess at that time. Shard seems logical. I also am simply going with unnamed shard because the epigraph letter is literally unsigned, unnamed. We have no name next to it. If it was a shard we already knew, I feel like Brandon would have put that name on there. I'm just going with he's drawing out the... He doesn't
put names on any of them.
Are you sure?
Yeah. Seiza doesn't sign... Oh, spoilers. Harmony doesn't sign his. I'll bleep that. Ruin doesn't sign his, and Endowment doesn't sign his, and yeah. They don't sign theirs.
It may be easy to mix up because sometimes you get name drops in the epigraph. Like Valor was one of those, right? They get a name drop of like Valor, the shard was whatever or something, but not like signed like from Dear Hoyd from Valor, you know, or something like that. So I don't know. I've been trying to think through this one, and what sticks out to me and what I can't figure out is in the end, it is my lies that do me in.
Yeah.
If I'm being honest of who this feels like to me, it's not right. It's incorrect. Absolutely incorrect. But my thought is the wording does not fit at all. Or sorry, the like verbiage, the way it's spoken, the prose or whatever it is, does not fit at all. But the words make sense to me logically that this is somehow Honor talking to Dalinar, but that's not the case. In my head, this is a conversation at the end of the book between Honor and Dalinar, where Dalinar is sent into servitude of Odium, and he's like, it may be a great long time before we see one another again. I'm sorry that I continue to be someone with whom a relationship is nearly impossible, and things like that. Like, that seems like the situation we've got going on. So the wording, like the things that are said, makes me think of that. However, the context, like the actual things happening and the way this is written, tells me otherwise, that I do not know who this is, and I do not think it's Honor.
Let's go through some candidates. It's not devotion or dominion, probably. Not Rune or Preservation. It's not Odium, Cultivation, or Honor. It's not Endowment, probably, since we've seen a letter from him already. So that leaves Autonomy, Ambition, Invention, Mercy, Valor, Whimsy, or Virtuosity.
This doesn't seem like virtuosity to me. That was one I was thinking of cutting from the list. Something else I want to highlight.
She could be peace out, see ya, and then goes and splinters herself. Spoilers.
Trevor, on this tonight.
No. That one I can say because you don't know what's a spoiler for. You just show up on that one in that said book. And you're like, oh, okay.
Okay, Trevor. Anyways, So I'm trying to look at the words that are said for clues. So one is, somehow I've never been good at this. 10,000 years and some things I just cannot learn. This feels like, and I've desperately tried to find whimsy, so maybe this is loaded, but the aloofness, it feels like this lacks direction, and it feels like it's like, oh, so sorry, I'm just not good at this, like, sorry, it's so hard to have a relationship with me, maybe one day, like, that feels like a whimsy thing to me or something. Like, this doesn't, like, our other shards are way more direct. I'm assuming whimsy is not as direct. That's an assumption. I do not know. I have not met whimsy yet. But that's probably my leading guess. It's just kind of kind-hearted, mellow, and like not conclusive and not necessarily like full of effort. It's like, oh, so sorry. Oh, your letter was so nice, as always. I'm just not good at this, and I just don't know when we're going to bond, but maybe one day. Like, that just feels aloof and whimsical or something. I don't know.
I would actually go the other direction. It seems pretty logical to me. It seems like this person slash shard has a head on their shoulders and still won't help.
But it's, everything is all about lessons that they fail to learn. Another lesson I failed to learn time and time again. It's recognizing flaws, but not doing anything about them.
Correct. So. I would agree with that. So
I was almost thinking invention. Is that one of the ones you read off on your list, Trevor?
Yes. So
it's true.
Yeah. Ambition, invention, mercy, valor, whimsy, virtuosity, unnamed 16th.
There's no way this is ambition. I think.
I would agree. Probably not autonomy. Autonomy's off doing other things at the moment. Spoilers. How many other Cosmic books can I spoil in one conversation?
There's a lot.
I'm doing good so far.
The invention piece was maybe tied into like the lessons I've learned. That seems like a learning, like a discovery, maybe an invention driven. It feels tenuous. I really honestly have no clue.
Yeah.
If I had to put my chips down, I think I'd put it under I for invention.
I would probably put it under unnamed 16th.
I could also get behind invention, and I could get behind the unnamed one, because this one doesn't seem clear to me.
Yeah.
A lot of these, I feel like I am playing with a bit of unknown. We don't really know mercy. We know a little bit about valor. We know a little bit about invention and whimsy, but not enough to say definitively. I'm sure one day we will laugh back at these epigraphs though and be like, obviously it was this, but not today. I don't know.
All right. Chapter 86. Therapy session with Kaladin and Zeth. Once again, Elliot, you said this one is a little bit more successful and level-headed and well done from Kaladin. I would agree with you. Kaladin has this moment where Zeth like stands up and leaves, and Kaladin wants to like go make a plan without Zeth, and you know, really wants to be proactive as possible about this. And what is it? What stops him? Is it this wind or Sylphrenna, or who stops him? Like, or is it himself?
I think it's himself.
Yeah.
Syl kind of chimes in on it, but I think it's Kaladin showing some restraint. He knows that his main job is actually just to listen to Zeth. And he does this a lot. Like, he does share a story. He's asking questions. He's kind of probing. But the biggest thing he's there to do is just let Zeth process and help him do that. And so when Zeth makes a couple steps forward, just letting him churn on that for a little bit is probably exactly the right thing to do there. So I think it's a little bit of restraint on Kaladin's part, which, again, more maturity in this therapy. What I keep butchering whatever the verb of therapy would be. So I'm going to stop. I'll come up with another one later. Helping. Thank you. Yes.
There we go. Yeah.
Where do you guys think Seth's going to end up? Is he going to actually swing back towards Kaladin? We're running out of time here. Is he going to stay
this
self-pity, Skybreaker, hide behind my oaths?
This, I think, is going to depend on what it is we're about to face, aka the voice. What did Zeth supposedly face in his past? That's where we leave past Zeth, is he's achieved honor bearer, and then the voice speaks and says, come to me and whatever, blah, 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 city, it is time we meet, or something ominous like that. Zeth has been rather quiet about what it is they're about to face. They're like headed that way. The Spren are behaving weird. They're headed to confront something. And Zeth is not sharing what it is. So I think what is all going to go down in that climax is absolutely going to dictate where Zeth ends up with all this, which maybe that's a whole lot of words to say, not much of Rafo.
I have bounced around a lot with what I think is going to happen to Zeth. Side note, Elliot, I looked it up. I think council is the word you were looking for.
Ah, yeah, that would probably work.
Council is probably the verb you're looking for. Anyways, Zeth, I still have this stuck in the back of my head. We talked about this weeks back, probably like a day 3, day 4 conversation about the color splash. And I still think that we're going to see some sad end to Zeth, and it's going to be he's earned his color splash, which is red, and it's going to be his blood on his white clothes, which will be very sad. I think that's still very plausible. As far as where he will go, I think Brandon has been leading us on this. Like, is he going to stay with the good guys in Kaladin and choose for himself? Or is he going to follow Nail and the Skybreakers and be a sad emo guy who hates himself? And I think I'm starting to think that we don't know what's going to happen. It's not that clear to us right now. And the reason I say that is because of this turn with his Spren. I think that there is a way that he both... I did not think this literally before this chapter. I didn't think that there was a way for him to remain a Skybreaker with this Spren and still... Oh. Hold true to doing what's right, to being an independent thinker and doing what's best for him. I didn't think that there was a way to do both. But now I think that there is. I think he's going to find some kind of... I think he's going to develop a good, healthy relationship with his Spren, where they're going to be able to help each other and be good buds, just like Kaladin and Syl. That's the hope. That's the goal here, is I want to see redemption for the Skybreakers as an order. And I think that would be awesome to see through the lens of Zeth working with this Spren, Kaladin, Syl, and Zeth all working with this Spren. It's also cool to me because I've just assumed these Spren are just know what to do as a bonded Spren. But this Spren is changing that line of thinking for me. I'm not like... This is the first time we've seen a Spren be... So, okay, think back to the Wave Kings. Syl comes onto the scene, and she... I feel like she intuitively understands the Nile bond, like, with Kaladin. But she, as that grows, her consciousness, her like, understanding grows as well. This Spren seems to have full, like, awareness and understanding. Probably due to, we've seen things like it's quicker now because there's a lot of bonds and things like the whole interaction that people have with the cognitive realm, things like that. But it doesn't understand how to be a good Spren, which is really funny to me. And not something that I knew would be the case with a high Spren, especially. So all in all, I've said a lot about it, but I'm really intrigued to where this is going. Is it going to still somehow turn back to a nail versus the rest? Or is this going to be like, hey, no, nail, look, like there's a better way of doing this. Like, yeah, I think there's going to be a middle ground, a third option, if you will, that we haven't.
I did not expect to have any sympathy for Zeth Spren, of all people, in this book. And yet here we are. He shows up and says, hey, Kaladin, I need your help. You're doing this therapy thing. I'll give it a try. And he does. He sits down and tries to talk through some stuff with Kaladin. And I mean, I sympathize for him by the end of this chapter.
I fully agree with you, Trevor. I could not stand this run.
Yeah.
Like my top three ops, if you will, for this like book was like Moash, Taravangian, this Spren. Like it was like
1-2, 1-2-4.
Yes, wow. Exactly. Exactly. Like that was like this Spren is the worst. Ever since the scene where they're in Shadesmar and he just absolutely, my understanding was this Spren was actively sabotaging, was the impression I had. It sounds like this Spren just had no idea what to do. At least that's the question now. So anyways, I can rescind that a little bit. He's not number three on the list, but maybe number 10 or so.
Can we talk for a second about how his name is a number? I couldn't like get past patterns. This. What? And then they joke about that, right?
I thought that was,
I can't
funny.
Say that.
That was very funny.
No, where I got hung up on this was as soon as he starts becoming a number, 1-2-1-2-4, I could not get my brain away from Les Miserables, of all places.
2-4-6-0-1.
Yes.
I was about to say the exact same thing. Exact same.
So now as I'm reading this in my head, I'm going 1-2-1-2-4 every single time that he's, you know, addressing exactly. him by name, because I'm thinking of Javert, the Inspector Javert, you know, condescending 2-4-6-0-1, do this thing. And it's like, okay, is this a prisoner inmate or is this a person?
I'm really glad that y'all both felt that way too, because I was absolutely going to come in here and be like, Les Mis, 2-4-6-0-1, like we've got it, Stormlight now.
I'm so glad I was not the only one.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, hold on. Before we move on from 2-4-6-0-1, and I'm just going to call him that from now on. He makes the offhand comment, significant sunlit man spoilers, by the way, for the next like 5 minutes or whatever this is going to be. He makes the offhand comment that for the Skybreakers, the Spren also say the oaths and the Spren also are Knights Radiant. And I'll come back on that in a second, but that one line packs a huge punch for me at the end of Sunlit Man. When Auxiliary is talking to Nomad or Zellion or the Sunlit Man or whoever, whatever other title we want to give him, and says, I didn't betray my oath. I'm still a Knight Radiant. I can save those people. And gives the end of that book the punch it has. I was a little confused when he says, you know, I'm a Knight Radiant. I didn't betray my oaths. He is. In a Skybreaker relationship, they also say the oath, and Auxiliary doesn't betray his. That one line gives that the end of that book quite the punch to me. I thought that was really cool.
I agree. That was interesting. And I wasn't sure though, like what their oaths look like, because we've been told what Zeth's are. I don't remember them all off the top of my head, but they've been fairly straightforward and kind of what you'd expect for a Skybreaker. Like for his, I'm going to get the number wrong. Third oath.
2-4-6-0-1.
Too many numbers. Too many numbers. The No, that Zeth has sworn an oath to serve Dalinar.
Third.
That is his third? Okay.
His first is the same as everyone else. Second one is I will seek justice. Third is swearing an oath to something, whether that be a person or right. a law.
Right. So are the...
Dalinar.
Yeah.
I guess my question is, are the High Spren, the Skybreaker Spren, swearing the exact same oaths, or do they have a different structure? Or is it very much those law-based, justice-based thing? I'm
curious. Good question. Something else I wanted to pick, there's no longer some of the spoilers for anyone who could hear that. That's deafened. I have this crazy headcanon of why that is the case. What about the recreants? The scene that we're about to see in our flashbacks. All the other orders walk away except for the Skybreakers. The Skybreakers have already left. I wonder if they put in that they've already left and done their Skybreaker thing. I wonder if they put in having the Spren swear their oaths as like a bond protection thing, because they have a bunch of Jedis that like choose to debond. But now I'm wondering if the Skybreakers include oaths with the Spren swearing the oaths as a more like autonomous, like individuality thing. And maybe they could survive a debonding. Any thoughts?
Not fully formed ones. I'm still trying to think about what the impacts of this would be. I'm following your questions. I don't know if I have answers. Yeah.
I also see what you mean. I feel like I can't reasonably say I think a high Spren could like survive, or at least healthily survive like the breaking of a bond with a Radiant.
Right.
You know, obviously if they aren't bonded to a Radiant, that's different. But I think even though they seem to operate differently, it's hard for me to believe that that could be that, like, that they could survive that. I think that is too far.
Like, let me put it this way. Right now, I think if Kaladin and Syl debonded, that would do way more damage to Syl than if Zeth and 1-2-1-2-4 debonded. I don't think 1-2-1-2-4 would care. I think there's a certain level of like individuality that 1-2-1-2-4 has than if Zeth like abandoned him on a rock somewhere.
I see what you mean about the individuality, and that makes sense to me. However, I also think you're underestimating how seriously they'd probably take the oath. The thing is, it feels like a like affectionate care or love versus like an obligation or a commitment. I feel like they are like obligated to be together, but like that's a seriously like binding oath. Like that's one of the rules, if you will, like you stay with your Radiant, you know, or something like that. I do agree that I feel like it wouldn't have the same, it would be more like I failed at my job than it would be like I'm heartbroken, if that makes sense. Right, I think that's fair, to a fair distinction to say. And I really want that to change. I'm really hoping to see more of a genuine bond. I'm really hoping that there's more of a genuine bond with Zeth and 1-2-1-2-4. I really want that to change, because that seems like to be the missing piece for the Skybreakers, is that like relational aspect. So I really, really want that to change.
Kaladin and the Wind have a discussion at the end of this section that I want to touch on. Kaladin is not willing to give Nail a chance. And it's actually the wind that comes in to Nail's defense and gives Kaladin like this not vision impression thing of Nail doing epic, cool herald stuff, like defending innocence and seeking justice and like doing his thing. I'm like, yeah, let's go, Nail. It's a little bit of redemption for old pastime Nail. I thought it was really cool that we could see just like a brief description of Nail defending some innocence back in the day. I thought that was cool.
I agree wholeheartedly. This episode and last, like, we've been getting these really cool, this one's more of a flashback memory, but we've really been glamorizing our heralds. Like, last episode,
it's true, yeah,
Taln and Shalash got like the coolest sequences we've gotten with our heralds ever, in my opinion. And now we get this. We've had some other stuff. I even would even argue that they began to redeem Kalak at the start of this book. It's been a while since we've read that, but at least began. And so I think we're going to see a lot more with our heralds before the end of the book, because it definitely seems to be setting them up in a way that we will at least like appreciate them more. So I'm kind of metagaming that of like, I think we're going to see more, like, I feel like we're getting all the herald spotlights because maybe they'll have a part left to play in this story.
The Elokar effect.
Yeah, exactly. Like developing the character before they go out in a blaze of glory.
Yeah, I do wonder, I definitely struggle with, can we unbreak them? Because we can redeem them without unbreaking them. You know, if we see the good that they've done, if we understand the legacy that they've left, if we recognize the massive impact for good they've had, that's one thing. But like, what next? Do they have, can we bring them back into this story, or is it just sing their praises, understand the value, and then they right off into the sunset?
This is the second one. Anything else?
I'm definitely ready to see Nail right off into the sunset.
Alive or dead?
Either works, I guess.
Dead or alive.
Yeah, exactly.
Bounty's the same.
One other quick thing from chapter 86. In this conversation with the wind says something interesting. Time and I are cousins. Both of us wear away the things we caress. I honestly cannot remember my early notes and theories. They're all written down. It's kind of a jumble. There's a lot of pages. We've had a lot of episodes now on Wind of Truth. I might try and go back and find it. I remember one of our early discussions with the wind. We were wrestling with, there's wind, there's stone, and there's night. And these are like powerful spren of gods of the old days or something like that is what they've been referred to as. I thought time might be one of them, or was it truth? I can't remember straight. But this almost seems to be a conversation or a confirmation that time is one of those, maybe?
Put a pin in the confirmation. It was time, because you were pulling your hair out because the word time started a sentence.
Yes.
And you were like on to Sanderson about he's hiding a name in here and like the whole capitalizing thing, and he's putting it at the beginning of a sentence on purpose. Now, back to your confirmation thing. Call me a pessimist or something. I'm not sure she's talking about an actual spren.
It's time. Hard to tell. Like, it could just be a metaphor.
Right.
It could just be a metaphor. And guess where the name time is in the sentence again?
At the start.
The very first word of the sentence. So it's capitalized again.
Would you rather she be grammatically incorrect in saying me yes. and time, capitalized T?
Yes, so that I would know if we're talking about a person or if this is just a metaphor about, oh, I'm like time. Now, I think time is one of the old spread gods. I think so.
I was about to ask you, Elliot. Okay, let's for a moment here assume Sanderson is being sneaky and intentionally making this hard to notice and putting it at the front. If time is an entity here, what does that mean? Who is time? What is time doing? How do we feel about time?
Am I running out of time? Yeah, there's probably a lot of jokes to be had with time there. I don't
lost
know.
To time.
His name is Justin. Justin Time.
Justin Time. The storm father was turned in from time. Father Time.
Ooh. I don't know that it's going to be a big deal. Like, even if this is confirmed, even if time is one of the old spring guys, I don't know that that matters. I don't know that that's going to be even important or relevant in the story going forward. I think the wind is going to be important. But if there's other entities that are kind of like that, that may not even come into the story at all. So whether this is right or wrong may not even matter.
Alrighty.
That's fair. I have no idea how time as an entity would fit into what we have going on. So
chapter 87, Love and Betrayal. We have the betrayal of Bot and Mishram. By Malishi, kind of. He hesitates and then Honor says, do it. So what do you guys think?
Sorry, I did not make the Emperor Palpatine connection until you just said that.
What? It's, you know.
Okay, so making sure I have everything straight here. So Malishi is the one to imprisoned by Edo Mishram, right?
But in the gemstone.
Yes, in the gemstone. But weren't we under the impression that that was not the case, that it was our heralds?
No. Maybe. Malishi was always part of it. We knew that. But okay. We didn't know that Honor was a part of it. That was the big reveal.
I see. I guess the reason I had that thought was because the first we learned about this more was with Kalak at the start of this book. So I think yes. For that reason, I probably assumed it's a Herald affair.
Kalak said, if I'm not mistaken, Kalak says, I helped him hide it in the spiritual realm, Malishi.
Yeah.
So that's why that's why I know where it is.
Getting that all sorts of mixed up. So, okay. So here we actually see it happen. We see that Honor is involved. Our understanding before was that Odium is the one who is a bit afraid of Bayado Mishram, right? Because Bayado Mishram could provide the forms of power for the Parshendi, the singers and the listeners, but not Honor. So I'm still trying to piece this together. I feel like this didn't hit me as hard as it should have. It's crazy. First of all, I knew that. I knew it was crazy, but I'm trying to figure out the motive still. The motives of Honor still seem to elude me. I feel like it's made it very evident that we are not supposed to be rooting for Honor here. Like, this and the previous chapters as well, they're definitely painting Honor as a bad guy. I think that is pretty evident, in my opinion.
Honor is willing to do whatever it takes to achieve the everlasting peace, in quotes. And that's the backstabby part. I mean, obviously he's not a good guy, but I wouldn't go as far as to say he's a bad guy. He's willing to imprison Ba'ed Mishram and every singer on Roshar to preserve himself, presumably, or because he's afraid of Odium, you know, that he's willing, he's the Taravangian. He's willing to ignore the cost to get the outcome.
I was thinking that as well, Trevor, but I'm trying to put my finger on the distinction, because there's a distinction here, right? For I mean I guess I'm trying to figure that out. So Odium is trying to, what is Odium's ultimate goal? Because doesn't Odium say, like any villain says in all these stories, like, yeah, once I'm done with my plan, like we'll have world peace, if you will, like through domination, like I'm going to rule over everything and then everything will be great. That's usually like the goal. But so then we have Honor here, who is seeking everlasting peace, you said, right? Through any means necessary. But if it really is through any means necessary, then that's the question we have of, like, is it, so where is this just the Taravangian like line of thinking where the ends justify the means no matter what?
Here's the catch for me on this one, and Gareth the Windrunner calls him out on it. According to Gareth, they made oaths to, in good faith, negotiate. And Honor appears to have violated that to lure Mishram into a vulnerable situation where she could be captured. And I think it's even more nuanced than that, too, because Malishi is only able to do this because he's able to form a connection with Mishram. Did you guys catch this? Dalinar understands what's going on because he had to do the same thing with the Thrill. Epic scene back in Oathbringer, goes into the red mist, connects with the Thrill through his bloodlust, through the past that he's had, where he's had this drive to kill. That's what allows him to capture the Thrill. Same thing here. Malishi connects with Mishram through their joint desire for lasting peace. So Honor has used this desire, this agreement they had to figure this out, to then backstab Mishram into capturing her. That does not seem honorable. And like, to the point of, if Honor is not honorable, that seems to be a self-contradiction. Is he going to like unmake himself?
Honor's dead. Moment?
Yeah, we understand that Honor is dead, and we understand that often shards die if they've violated some form of agreement that kind of weakens them or opens them up to things, right? Is that what we're saying here? I think so. Isn't the understanding that Honor died when all the Radiants canceled their oaths and bonds and everything? Or we get the, you know, famous line of Honor's dead and Odium killed him, right?
Yes. So that's what I was actually going to bring up, is up until this point, the info we've had is I am dead, Honor is dead, Odium has killed me, and presumably he used a Dawn Shard to do it, so you need to go get the Dawn Shards, is what he tells Dalinar. Right at the end of The Way of Kings, we get one more vision, and it's, I am dead, Odium has killed me, go get a Dawn Shard. However, over the course of this book, now we know all of that info that we were given from Honor or the Stormfather is suspect. So I'm now of the idea that because of what just happened, Honor dies from himself. They say that Odium is trapped on Braze as they're doing this. Honor does a dishonorable thing. I think Honor might have just died or has begun the process of dying at his own hand.
Yeah, my understanding is he's opening himself up to this. Maybe he thinks that this trapping by Mishram is worth it, worth opening himself up or weakening himself. I mean, we know that Honor is, quote, dead at the hands of Odium, so if that's the case, then I feel like it would not be worth it. But that's the impression I'm under right now, is that he has opened himself up to this. And this is probably the start of that. Because you're right, he absolutely breaks an oath or a promise here, which, yeah, I was under the impression that the Shard itself would not be able to do this. Like, maybe if there was something where you trapped Honor into basically promising two things that they could not fulfill or something like that. But, like, the making the choice to, I'm going to break this intentionally for this other reason, I was under the impression that that would not be possible. So I a bit shooketh.
When we're closing this scene, we hop over to Renar and Relaine and Shallan. And Odium finds them at the end of the chapter. But before that, they make this huge revelation of, oh, other Unmade were there. Ja'anat was, like, you know, spying on it. And that fed into Mishram feeling betrayed. And does that mean, like, the other Unmade were in on the plan to capture Ba'ido Mishram? Like, that was the implication I got, but that wasn't spelled out. Did I get the wrong conclusion there?
I wasn't sure quite what to make of that. I think Ja'anat is mentioned specifically, which maybe helps kind of explain her motives of what she's trying to do. Of, I know that this went down a way that everyone has incorrectly assumed. I need to help people discover that truth. Like, that kind of fits in maybe with the story there, but the rest of the Unmade, I don't know why that's important.
And then Formless shows up and everybody scatters.
Oh my goodness. And then Formless show up. Well, okay. So hold on a second. I actually need you guys help on this. Is it Formless? It gets confusing to me. So here we go. Yeah. So Renar and Relaine and Shallan are chatting about Unmade. They're trying to figure out what is going on there. By the way, actually, before we talk about Formless, in that discussion, Relaine has a really good segment, I think, where he talks about Odium tricking them into hating humans is doing exactly what Odium wants. He kind of has a good line about, it's good for us to resist Odium's baiting us into hate by choosing to see good. Like, is there hateable things in the humans and Honor? Like, yeah, we just witnessed it. But are there good things too that we can see? Like, also, yes. Like, I thought that was good. And then this happens. They turn to see something approaching across the expanse of simple dark stone in a black sky, lit like some places in Shadesmar with some unseen, inexplicable light. The figure wore plain leathers, as Shallan had been wearing when she'd entered this place. Its face was a dark swirl of mist, like a whirlpool of smoke. Is it Formless? Just walking up to them?
I made that assumption, but Shallan also makes that assumption, right? She says, like, oh, it's me. We need to run to someplace more stable and fight it. Or something like that.
She says, it's me. I'm making it somehow. Storms, I should be more in control. I'm sorry. We need to leave.
That leads me to think that this is Formless.
So is this the first time that other people are seeing Formless too, perhaps? Like, it's progressing to the point where it's not just Shallan having encounters with Formless. Now it's
she's substantiating Formless.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would think so. Maybe not substantiating, but maybe it would not surprise me. But yeah, it feels to be that way of, like, it's gotten to a point where Formless is still not gone. And yeah, she's still kind of hanging around. So I think that's what it is. I do think it is Formless. We've had the jokes of, is this, whenever we see Formless, are we actually seeing Shallan's mother? But I think this is probably Formless, but you know, you never know. It could be that. Could be Shallan's mom walking in with a face of swirling mist.
You know? I was just trying to think about, would that fit into the scene we're watching? Because I think the theory we had before was her mom, Shannarach, was in the scene and Shallan is just like mentally replacing her with Formless. But would Shannarach be in this scene like we're witnessing right there with Milishi and everything? Like, probably not, right? This is the Formless.
The Heralds are off duty at this
time. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, I don't know if this is big or small or whatever, but for some reason, Formless walking up to the group and just kind of scaring them off was very surprising to me.
Well, and then including Interlude 14 in this real quick, Odium like shuts them up in their little spiritual realm prison and says, I'll deal with you guys later. I've got Dalinar to go deal with. I was like, okay, so now they're locked in there? Like Odium finally found them and they're in trouble.
And like you pointed out, Trevor, Odium finds them and starts to take control of the situation because the Stormfather withdraws.
Yeah.
Like the Stormfather reaches a breaking point, if he hadn't already in the past, of, all right, you've seen the dirty deed. You've gotten to the secret that I fought so hard to keep you away from. I'm out. Good luck, man. You're on your own.
Yep. I don't have much more to say besides Stormfather's suspended in the timeout corner.
So let's do interlude 14 right here then, actually, because it's not going to take more than a second. What I alluded to at the very beginning of this episode of this recording, I thought before I started this book, I thought we were not going to get through the 10 days. I thought something big and surprising was going to happen. We might not even see the contest. Then we pick up the book and the entire structure of the book is no longer parts. It's in days. And the outline of the book of what we've seen so far seemed very methodical, literal, day by day approaching the contest. So then I've swung back entirely the other way of, okay, we're just going to have a contest. It's 10 days. It's very straightforward. That's the climax of the book. And then Odium does this thing, yeah, where he discovers them. He says, all right, stop messing around. He calls them rats, I think. Like, I found the rats in my,
sewer. Not little rats.
And then in interlude 14, he goes, man, I really have to do something about Dalinar. I need to make sure that he joins me regardless of the outcome of the contest. Therefore, I need to break him.
Yep.
Now I think my pendulum is swinging back. Now I think we might be headed for the contest will not be what we think it is. And I can't fully formulate details around exactly what that means, but this seems like Odium shifting strategies a little bit yet again of, I've already got kind of fail safes in my plan. I'm going to be good in all this, but now actually, you know what? I need to break down our here. So are we just headed for like a couple days of Dalinar torture in the spiritual realm so that when he comes out, he's a broken man and can't even fight Odium? Like, I think I'm back in a twist is coming camp.
This is super interesting to me because of a few reasons. One, I'm surprised that Odium, that Todium here is seeking this, of seeking a backup plan. This, like, I want to make sure that Dalinar joins me regardless. I was under the impression he's like, I can't lose this. I've got some trick up my sleeve. I can't lose this contest. But it sounds like he's seeking an alternative of like, I want Dalinar to join me whether or not I win this contest. Second thought I have is we've been under the impression this whole time that Dalinar will refuse to not be the champion that's set forth. I've been under that assumption. We've thought about maybe if anyone else, it's like Kaladin or something like that. Kaladin, maybe in a crazy world, Zeth. But like the whole thing being Dalinar's not going to send someone else forward. You know, he's going to do it himself. What if Dalinar is unable to? Like, he's been, I don't know, brutalized and broken down by Taravangian in the last 2 days before the challenge, that even Dalinar himself is like, I can't go out there. go on, Kaladin, me boy, take up the crown and go out there, you know, like something like that. I'm wondering if Todium could be spelling his own fate, his own demise, by terrorizing Dalinar now instead of at the contest, potentially. Yeah, those are my thoughts. I don't know if that seems real or relevant or not, but that's where my head is. I feel like this may be a big mistake for Taravangian.
At first, when I saw the length of the interlude, it being 2 minutes and 14 seconds on audiobook, I was thinking to myself, okay, what on earth could this possibly be? And I read it for the first time, or I listened to it, and I was like, okay, we're going to go teach Dalinar a lesson. That's not anything new. But now that I really think about it and talk about it with you guys, you're right. It might be like a preemptive strike before the contest, and it just completely flips the context of the contest. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I was a little sad when I read this interlude because I didn't think much of it. I was like, we just had the craziest interlude we've ever had, in my opinion, where Taravangian goes, oh, this is a Carbranth. That's a weak chink in my armor. I will just delete it. I will absolutely delete the program, uninstall it from the earth, and move on. And then we go from that to kind of like, it felt like to me like a Dalinar, we're going to go foil his plans. And it didn't carry the same weight. And so I was, when I saw this 2 minute long thing, I thought it was just going to be like, I don't know, Taravangian blows up another city somehow or something like catastrophic. This kind of just felt like I know the interludes seem to be keeping tabs on Odium, which is good, but to me it felt kind of silly. I'm like, I feel like we could have had an interlude here for somebody else, in my opinion. And then we could have just seen Odium tormenting Dalinar or something like that, you know. It felt a little silly, but also, you know, I have a lot of faith that this is going to be something crazy. I'm wondering what kind of tests Dalinar might be put under. It does, you know, I'm assuming we're going to go straight into that. That's the assumption I'm under, that we're going to see it right away. Some serious challenges for Dalinar.
Backing up a little bit. Ellie, do you have a theme for day 7?
Yeah, I rushed us ahead there by jumping us to interlude 14. But yeah, going back to our chapters, we did wrap up day 7. Day 7 is now complete. That almost feels a little crazy right there, actually. That feels well progressed through our 10 days, only as Paul astutely calculated at the beginning. Three days left in our book here. Theme, what did I get out of day 7? I got out of day 7. I struggle to find the right word for this. So I'm going to start with one and then kind of maybe throw in a few at there in conjunction with it. Day 7 felt like a day where multiple of our characters achieved something or mentally got to a point of like acceptance or conquering fears or overcoming doubts. I wasn't quite sure the right word for that. What I kind of settled on was like arrival or maybe emergence, or like a more technical term, maybe like actualization. People are facing what's in front of them and overcoming it in these chapters. And the examples that I have are, it even started at the beginning with Sigzil. Sigzil had a big moment where he like accepted himself as a leader. He finally sees himself as a leader, I think has a big conversation with Leighton about this. Now, of course, Leighton doesn't make it through the day and Moash kills him. So I'm not quite sure how to tie that into my theme, but Renarin seriously conquers a lot of his fears. We just talked last episode about in the beginning parts of chapter 84, he is not afraid to face gods anymore. I read kind of a heartbreaking quote of simple mortality is just a mere nightmare for him now. It's like, whoa, okay, that's arriving at a new version of Renarin that we haven't seen before. And then a lot of our storylines and plots kind of arrive at other moments where the Windrunners and the Skybreakers are at odds and the Skybreakers leave. We have the scenes we just talked about where we kind of arrive on the scene of this betrayal and Mishram's capture, and also maybe on like the emergence side of it, Taln, the reemergence of an epic warrior in a scene where he takes down an entire army on his own. This concept of kind of loosely tying these all together into coming into one's own, maybe, would be a way to phrase that.
Cool. Thanks. And last but not least, interlude 13 with Lyft. Just as a personal note, I think this is my favorite Lyft chapter we've ever gotten. And she talks to the sibling. She's impersonating Navani. The sibling says, "Hey, does Peaky time mean anything to you?" And Lyft's like, "What? That's a kid's game. You play with babies." And the sibling says, "Well, I just heard it from, I don't know, some random room, like floor 33 or something like that." And reenacts the voice, and it's the voice of a parrot. And Lyft's like, "That's my chicken. We got to go save it." So then she goes and saves it and finds Zile. I thought it was very funny, the internal dialogue that Lyft has when she cuts through the floor. She goes, "Oh, and there's my chicken. I got to go save it. And there's some guy hanging on the off the ceiling, but there's my chicken. I need to go save it." I thought that was quite funny. But in all, at the end of this interlude, Zile is free. What do you guys think?
Okay, this was not what I expected. I'm very, very grateful because this exponentially increases the odds of some of my bingo board things coming true. Going from like 0.0001 to like a 1% chance maybe that we see Zile reconnect with our other characters and have some much needed dialogue. But I got really excited in this chapter because a lot of these things are starting to link. Some of our loose threads are starting to link a little bit here, and I'm all for it. I love whenever we see the interludes like really come to fruition, come full circle, and there's resolution. I think this is a cool mix of characters to stick together. And yeah, I'm also really glad to see Zile get freed, get out of there, because when we saw him before, I was just like, what is going on? What's going to happen? I felt so bad for the guy, you know? And so, yeah, I'm glad to get a little progression with him. I'm hoping that, I think Trevor maybe made some mention, I don't remember when, but about Lyft and Zile, and or maybe you talked about Lyft's book in the back half or something like that. And I think this will be some way relevant to later Stormlight books. I do think we're definitely going to get more with this in this book, though. Not a lot, not like a little bit, but we're definitely going to get some other point. I don't think it's going to end on this. Whether that's a quick, brief thing or not, I think we're going to see them again at some point. And I was actually surprised you don't think that.
My prediction is going to be the opposite. I think this is the teaser for Stormlight 6. Because Stormlight 6, if I'm not mistaken, is Lyft's book. And Lyft being an apprentice under Zile, I could absolutely sign up for that. Give me that book all day. So I think that's what this is a little teaser for Stormlight 6. But I could definitely see more Zile Lyft in this book, but not much more.
I have a petition to bring before the judges.
Denied. Next one.
Of this honorable tribunal. Bingo cards. Okay. On my bingo card, I have Lyft declares she is not hungry.
Okay.
And I would like to shout out Rachel in our Discord. Here's what Rachel has to say.
Okay.
On page 872, Wendell points out that all the food that Lyft isn't eating and Lyft says don't want it. That fills a bingo space for Lyft declares she's not hungry, at least in spirit. So with all of the signatures on my petition here, all of two, me and Rachel, would like to propose to this honorable tribunal that a checkmark should be placed upon the Lyft declares she is not hungry due to her declining to partake of the food on the table, which Lyft would never do if she wasn't hungry.
Can we get a quick recap on the quote progression there?
So the words in the text, all Lyft says...
Let's review the footage.
All that Lyft says is don't want it. Don't want it. But
do you have the book in front of you?
I do.
Yeah, go ahead, read the whole paragraph for us.
Okay, sure. It starts with Wendell. Lyft, Wendell said, forming his bearded face from a pile of vines, his eyes a crystalline gemstones, and seemed worried. You aren't eating. Look at all this expensive food they've forced to give you to keep you out of trouble. Don't want it, she mumbled, her voice Navani's. Is that caviar? Lyft, that's caviar. And they goes on and on.
Goes on and on. Does it? What do they say? Because is it her dislike for the food, or is it her not wanting to? Because
she doesn't want it because it's given to her, because it's presented to her. Like she's not stealing it. It's presented to her because she's queen. I think he has a case here. Unfortunately,
I think I was going to say I think this counts.
I think it does.
She declares she's not if she because how the Lyft we know. Does not matter who it's from, where it is, what it is.
She just eats everything. Yes.
Right.
I had thought there was maybe a situation where this like caviar or fancier food or something is she's like, ew, I don't want this or something, but that's not the case. So
I think it's partly because she's like bored and frustrated. She wants to do something else besides eat. But I think that's the thing.
Lyft declares she's not hungry. She's like, I'm over this. I don't want to eat anymore. I think that counts.
I think it counts.
I think it is. And
thank you, Rachel, for advocating for me in the Discord channel. You and I are officially friends.
Yeah. Yes. All right. Anything else, gentlemen?
I don't think so. Yeah, we talked about Zyle's free now. Pretty epic conclusion to day 7. What's going forward on day 8?
Yeah, I was going to say, now that we're officially killing people off starting in day 7, who's dying in day 8 throughout any one-liner predictions?
Hold on, let me check my bingo board. either Pattern or Adolin, which either of those would be extremely sad. So yikes. I'm hoping... I don't know if I want that to happen, but I also want to win. So,
my actual predictions are Formless and Vienta are dying in day 8.
I concur. I don't think I have anything else to get. More Bridge 4, maybe? Do we have any more left?
That's just because they're on your bingo card. You need named Windrunners to die.
Yeah. Well, I have Windrunners. I'm thinking specifically, I mean, I guess they're all Windrunners, but Bridge 4 specifically. We seem to have a dwindling of Bridge 4. Maybe coming to a head with like Moash and Kaladin are all that's left and they have to have a showdown kind of thing.
Right. I'm still torn on whether it's Moash and Kaladin or Moash and Sigzil. I think it might actually be Sigzil that...
Maybe.
Takes Moash down finally. Okay. Thanks for joining me, Paul and Elliot. We will reconvene next week with chapter 88 through 90.
88 through 90. We're getting close to that one chapter 100 mark.
You're supposed to say bye.
Oh, toodles. See you next week.
Bye.